I might hand over to you.
Thank you very much, Joanna, and again, apologies from Hans, who's unable to be here today. So I refer to the agenda paper one, which is a memo written on the 18th of September, so there's a couple of updates to come as I go along. I'll give a broad overview, and then Hugh Shields will give us a bit more detail on the technical side and also on the last ASAF meeting. So, work plan, just looking at what we've done. Our big achievement, of course, since our last meeting here was the issuing of IFRS 9, financial instruments. Three parts to that. A logical model for classification and measurement, an expected loss impairment model, and a simplified and substantially reformed approach to hedge accounting. The three-part package, it'll be due to come into force on 1st of January 2018, which is quite a long lead time, but it's quite a big standard with quite a few changes.
And we've all got a copy of it.
Well, the summary. Yeah. Yes, you wouldn't want a copy of the standard itself. You couldn't fit it in your suitcase. in particular, the expected loss impairment model is quite a new model and will be a fundamental change to current practice and something that we've been encouraged to do. We're very pleased to have got it done. And so we're going to, because it's so fundamentally different, we're forming a transition resource group for the impairment part of this standard. It's a discussion forum to support stakeholders on implementation issues. It's not a decision-making body. It mirrors the one we've set up for a revenue recognition, except the revenue recognition one is done jointly with FASB. This one is not jointly with FASB. We're fairly anxious for people not to presume that this is what we'll do for every standard from now on. I think we've had two special circumstances and we'll just have to look as we go forward. How successful, for a start, these two are. I'll get on to the revenue recognition one later because it started and had one meeting. But we're feeling our way fairly much. And if it's not a decision-making body, what does it do if we come across particular problems with the standard? Well, I guess the presumption is we'll either refer them to the Interpretations Committee or to the Board itself if we think there's something fundamentally wrong with the standard. Our hope is that in most of the issues raised, we'll be able to say at the end of the day, if you read the standard properly and have a look at this and that, then you can get to the answer. But, you know, that may or may not happen in every circumstance. So watch that space. Kumo, when's the first meeting of that one group?
We haven't fixed a date as yet, Ian, because okay. We haven't got that many issues that have come to us as of now. So once we get a volume, we will do that.
Okay, good. Okay, so then moving on our program over the page in paragraph four, our two major projects at the moment, obviously leases and insurance contracts. On leases, we issued a document in August which sets out, I think, very clearly and very well the progress we've made to date and where we've got to. We're still meeting jointly with FASB on this project. We'll meet again next week, and we're going to talk more about definition of a lease at that meeting, plus some other issues. We've achieved convergence with FASB to the extent that we both agree there's an asset and a liability to go on the balance sheet. We haven't agreed on the, so far, we haven't finished the project yet, but we haven't agreed so far on the treatment of the leases expenses in the profit and loss account. And we have what we call the pure model, and FASB have a model which they say will cost less. So we've still to have a debate on that. The differences in the end of the day, we think won't be huge, especially when you get leases on a portfolio basis. But it would be nice to get closer together. And as I say, I can't promise anything, but we haven't given up all hope yet. And we're being pushed in a lot of ways. The FASB constituents, I think particularly the preparers, are pushing their model. We have a lot of constituents, a majority of constituents are pushing our model. And then we have another group of constituents who say that convergence is the most important thing. So between those three, we have to find a way through. Insurance contracts moves on. Hugh will tell us more detail of that, but broadly speaking, we're currently debating participating contracts. This is where the insurance company shares some of their investment income with the policyholders. And I mean, in most cases, it's 80 or 90% of the investment income, so it's quite a lot. How do we treat that? How do we treat the bit of investment income that remains with the company? It's a project where we get very diverse opinions around the world on just about every issue. And we've spent a lot of time trying to please a lot of people, and perhaps one of the dangers of that is that we've ended up with quite a complex model. And before we finish, we're going to have to step back and have a look and see if all the compromises we've made are worthwhile in terms of the complexity that they bring about. Conceptual framework, we're continuing with intensive work on that. We have about six papers each meeting. We have 42 papers to read this week for next week's meeting. Not on concepts, but in total. So that's going according to schedule, really, and it's really interesting. I think there's some groundbreaking work in there, particularly as regards OCI and profit and loss, and maybe between equities and liabilities as well, and some basic issues. Measurement is the other one, where we're having good discussions. So we're still planning to do an exposure draft early next year. We'll finish our discussions at the board this year, and then we're looking at completing this part of the conceptual framework anyway in 2016, hopefully early-ish 2016. And then I always love reading out the title of the paper in paragraph 6, Accounting for Dynamic Risk Management, a Portfolio Revaluation Approach to Macro Hedging. And I'm sure that's clear to everybody. That paper's been out for a while. Kumar's been in, and a comment period comes up, well, this week, end of this week. It's too early, it says in that paragraph, and I think it's right to determine whether there's a consensus on this accounting approach or not. It's quite radical. It's involved in, about how you take into account risk policies and the like when you report. It seems to be esoteric and for banks, but it is of relevance also to commodities companies and some other companies that trade in those sorts of things. So we'll wait and see what response we get back on that and how we take it forward. Research work, we have quite a large portfolio of research work. We've got the discussion paper on rate-regulated activities out, which is really trying to determine what's the scope of that project. And we held last week our first research forum at the Syed Business School at Oxford University last Thursday before last. Very successful. I think there are approximately 30 academics and 30 standard setters and a few other people. About five or six papers which had been edited and reviewed were given, and they were commented on. So overall, I think a very successful day and a great move forward in bringing the academic community closer to us and in focusing them, I think, a bit on topics that will help us in standard setting and trying to focus them more in that regard. We think we'll run another one of these forums next year, possibly in Hong Kong, and keep the momentum going with any luck. But it's all part of our overall research strategy. And then the disclosure initiative. Well, I didn't mention in the conceptual framework that we're looking at long-term investing and that Peter's going to talk to us at this meeting. So it was relevant, Charles, what you were saying. And I think our conclusion is pretty much the same as the B20 by what you said. But the disclosure initiative, we also will have a session from Christy. And that's quite an exciting project. Moving on to engagement strategy, and again, as Charles mentioned, we've always struggled to get investors involved. We haven't given up. We're working harder than ever to try and keep our investment, our engagement with investors strong. We have some, I think, quite exciting strategies coming up. We're not ready to announce them yet, but towards the end of this year, we're looking at different ways of engaging with investors, which hopefully will stimulate some interest from that sector. So it's very much top of mind for us. It's very much ongoing work in progress. And we mention here that council members can play an important role as well, and we talk about our secondary communications objective there. ASAF has met since this memo was written, and Hugh will broadly go through the topics that were discussed. ASAF, in my view, remains a very useful forum, and I think it's worked very well. We do get good advice from the ASAF members. We do listen to their good advice. It's a chance for them to debate amongst themselves and with us. It's started in April last year. It seems a long time ago, so we've probably had about six meetings so far. We meet four times a year. We have another one in December. And then we promised at the time we set it up that after 2 years it would be reviewed, and that review will be getting underway early in the new year. And Yael may speak about that later, but it'll be going back to basics. Have we got the right model? Should we have ASAF at all? Is it useful? How should it be structured? How many members should it have, et cetera, et cetera. But personal opinion, I hope we don't shift too much from the current structure. There's always pressure on membership. We always have more people who want to be members than we have spaces, and you know. But if you get too big, I'm fearful that it'll lose some of its usefulness, and so that's the balance that will have to be thought about during the review. European Commission has launched a public consultation on the impact of IFRS. Our staff have done a paper addressing some of the issues. We encourage people to respond to their public consultation. I think it's important we get all points of view. And that we also note that EFRAG's been reformed. Saskia's here somewhere. She might talk about it later, but it's well underway, and the new EFRAG will be in place by the end of this month or the beginning of next month. The old EFRAG finishes on the 31st of October. Globally, Joanna's already mentioned the little pocketbook, or whatever we call it. It's been updated again. We now have 126 out of 138 countries using IFRS in one way or another. So it's a very good picture. We've got countries coming on and improving all the time, and I'll mention two in a minute. And the next, we'll continue to update that document and to add to it. And we're also going to have a look at gathering data on the use of the IFRX taxonomy and how many countries are actually using that, and to try and get a grip on how well it's been accepted and how useful it's been. Hans, in his paragraph 20, mentions you'd visited Japan. Japan, of course, allows voluntary adoption of IFRS, and the take-up has increased substantially, up to 45 companies. They're confidently predicting 100 at least, and something like 35% or 40% of their market capitalisation. So that's good progress. One that's not mentioned here is India. India have announced a move towards IFRS, and it was announced in their budget, so that's a clear indication that it's government policy. They have an accounting standards board run by the Institute of Chartered Accountants of India, and they have an endorsement board, and they have the ministry, which has the final say on what happens. So it's a complicated process. I went there in July, and I'll be visiting again next month. We're working closely with the Accounting Standards Board there. They've proposed a number of potential carve-outs. We're having a video conference with them this week to discuss each of those carve-outs on a technical basis. They are not radical carve-outs. They are things I think we can talk through in the main. But it'll be a lengthy process. They've put those carve-outs out for consultation, and I think the consultation finishes this week. We'll have ongoing discussions with them. Our goal is to have them as close to pure IFRS as we can possibly get them. And our second goal is for them to allow companies to adopt pure IFRS if they wish to. And there's a large number of very big multinational companies in India who we think would be keen to do that if they had the option. They have had the option in the past, but there's a danger that the option will be taken away under this new legislation. We signed a joint statement of protocols with ESMA, the European Securities and Markets Authority, and I think the effects analysis was approved by the trustees last week, and I think that'll be a step forward in our due process. I won't go any further on the technical agenda. No, that's all then for Hugh. So I'm happy, before Hugh begins in more detail, to take any questions or comments if people have got any.
Thanks, Ian. And certainly I think that there are some really good high-level strategic things that are coming out there, and you can see an awful lot of them, in fact, we are talking about over the next couple of days. So I think if there are any, so if ignoring the technical side, questions or comments that people would like to make. And Peter, I see you've got your flag up, so would you like to start?
Yes, thank you. Thank you for that, Ian. I've just got one comment, really, which is a general one, and will have an impact on later discussions, not least which long-term investing. But speaking on behalf of the investment community in the UK, there is still a disagreement with the various IFRS bodies about primary users of accounts. And investors believe that investors are the primary user. We recognize there are other users and important users like creditors. But given the long-term nature of investors, and they are the people that own the companies, they are the people that take the residual risk, I think, if particularly within the conceptual framework, if it's recognized investors and long-term investors are the primary users, will help guide the thinking on areas such as materiality and particularly long-term investing. Now, we've had a dispute. I'm sitting next to Steve here who disagrees with me on this, but this is a view coming from the UK investment community. I'd be interested to know if other people have the same view or whether or not it's a one-off coming from the UK.
We have a session with investors later, and that'll be interesting. I know the IMA has been on this for a long time. I think our tentative decision for the exposure draft is that we leave the users the way it is, so you'll still disagree. But, of course, there's your chance with the exposure draft to come back again and make your point.
And Peter, what I'm going to suggest is, I think it's a very good point and very useful to get the views of the advisory council, as you say, whether it's just a UK view. And I think probably in the session that we've actually got on in investors later on, and Henry is nodding, so that perhaps might get people just to think about that. And as we get into that session on investing later on, just think about answering Peter's question, because I think it would be very useful globally and for the ISB to hear those views. Any other comments? Anne.
I just wanted to inquire a little bit about paragraph 12, Ian, where you are talking about the European Commission public consultation, so the impact of IFRS. I just was wondering if you had any thoughts about what was going on, particularly in the United Kingdom, regarding the impact of IFRS and discussions that I have seen about the impact on true and fair. I'd just like a bit of an update as to where you're thinking all that is at.
David will help me out on this. He's across it.
Yeah, thanks for that, Anne. I mean, the issue on true and fair really comes down to a legal issue. We've had seen some dispute in the UK and various QC's opinions being bounced around. You may be aware that last October, both the UK government in the form of the Department for Business, which is responsible for accounting standards and company law in the UK, and the UK Financial Reporting Council reaffirmed the primacy of true and fair, whether under IFRS or under UK standards. And they commissioned a second opinion from a guy called Martin Moore, who'd given an earlier opinion back in 2008, that actually helped to provide the legal underpinning for that. Now, there are still some UK investors who are still continuing to question that, but in terms of the UK legal authority, it's a legal issue, so not really one for the foundation or the board to consider, both at the UK and European level. But what we've seen from the UK authorities is a reaffirmation of that, and we haven't as yet seen anything from the European Commission at the European level. But the mere fact that every IFRS adopted for use in the EU becomes EU law, to me, personal view, kind of gives the game away that it is legal, and it's one of the criteria for adoption of IFRS. Of course, it's not contrary to the true and fair opinion set out in the EU accounting directives. And of course, with the work of EFRAG and the Commission and the Accounting Regulatory Committee, all those standards have gone through that process. So where the Commission will get to on that aspect, and I'm looking at Wojciech, I don't quite know whether that's part of their review, but certainly from our perspective, we see it as a legal issue. And of course, we say that because IFRS requires a fair presentation, which we see as a different articulation of the true and fair view, we think we're on solid ground, but of course we're not the final arbiters of that.
Okay. Anne, clear as mud. Sorry, David. Roger Podgell.
Yeah, just to support the point of view which Ines mentioned just now, that Indian Accounting Standard Board has appointed a special secretary for this purpose. So there are a lot of, as of today, there are a lot of carve-outs which are being discussed. This is the right time to take it up with the ministry, who has been, a special person has been appointed for this purpose. I am personally planning to meet him next week. Maybe during this period, if the council also is able to support that, I think we can remove a lot of carve-outs and maybe possibly for a consolidated purpose, whether we can adopt IFRS directly, those kind of discussions can take place. That will be really helpful.
Yeah, thank you for that. We have arranged to meet the ministry, but it'll be the second week of November. So you can tell us how you got on and we can work together on that one. I think it'll be very useful.
Raj, I think if you and Ian can, if you like, in one of the breaks, talk and see if you can, if you like, work on any other council members, I think, as well, to talk to Raj and Ian in terms of your experiences in health and thinking, well, how best to, if you like, get there in India, I think would be very, very useful. Yes?
I'm already in discussion with Kumar Dasgupta on this subject, so we will coordinate together and do the best.
Excellent. Olaf?
Thank you. I just wanted to make a comment about the work on long-term investment, because unfortunately I can't be here tomorrow during the session. Just very briefly, first of all, very much appreciate the ISB is doing this work. I think it is very important. And I think that there are consequences for long-term investment, are very important ones on the accounting rules, particularly for insurers. I think the one thing I would say that is a bit disappointment when looking at the notes, there's no explicit sort of mention of the need to understand and make sure that the link between assets and liabilities are properly captured. There's a lot of talk about measuring assets and liabilities in the right way, but I think mention of the link between assets and liabilities, because it's the matching that changes the nature of the exposure to the asset market movements that is crucial to capture. And of course that's all the whole debate in IFRS 4 and IFRS 9 and how they work together, but I think that link is something that seems to be missed out as one of the key points to make sure that the conceptual framework takes into account in developing the rules. I think just also mention, I think it was mentioned, the G20 and the B20 work, again all very good work. I think the point made about the need for insurance to get our accounting standards finished, I think that's right, but I think maybe we should add the word finished in the right way to make sure they do account for long-term investment. Thank you.
Thanks, Olaf. And obviously, Peter's not here at the moment in terms of long-term investing, but
well, that's a very big
Hugh, and perhaps when we get into the technical session, I see you're itching to push your button. Perhaps or cover it now if you'd like, Hugh.
The board did discuss in some detail this aspect of long-term investment as part of the conceptual framework discussions. Peter Clark has written quite a lengthy paper about it. You'll have concluded, or you've already heard from what has been said, that the board has at this point tentatively decided that the conceptual framework does not need to include specific requirements for long-term investments in the conceptual framework, and that as it currently stands, there are sufficient tools in the framework as it's envisaged in the exposure draft to help the board think about long-term investment. So that's really where it currently stands. There will be, that all said, I think when the exposure draft comes out, there will be quite a bit of material in the basis for conclusions which relay some of that discussion and provide some of the rationale as to why the board has at this point tentatively concluded what it has. So you should find that helpful. But the Peter Clark's paper, which is, I think, a very good and comprehensive analysis of the topic, is publicly available and I think a recommended read.
Thanks very much, Hugh. Any other queries or comments or questions of Ian? I just had a couple that I'd actually like to put to you as council members and thinking about the conversation there. And the first one was actually about the transition group for revenue. Obviously, as we've heard, there hasn't been a meeting for the IFRS 9 one. There has been one for revenue. And I guess it's from your experiences globally as to whether you see that there are, if you like, arguably great issues, great discrepancies, great concerns around revenue. And I'm sort of going to put Christoph on the spot too, because he's on that transition group, as to whether there are big things that seem to be coming out of that. But first of all, any council members like to comment on any issues that do seem to be coming through in relation to revenue that might be useful for the board? Isabel.
Just to say that it's probably still early days and you'll probably see more things coming up. But I mean, I don't have any examples right now, but I think companies have started to look at it. But, you know, it came out, there was the holiday season and everything. So a little bit early days yet.
And Christoph, from your perspective with the transition group, any comments? I'll leave that on.
I think I can say the same thing. It's a bit early days. We had the first meeting of the transition group. Some people left the meeting with, oh, there is a lot to do now for IFRIC or the board on the topics discussed, but others left it now. They don't think so. I think it was a fruitful debate, particularly because I didn't have the impression that anyone at the table was intending to give guidance, and that was my biggest fear when I entered the group, that finally the group will give guidance, but I observed sufficient hesitation. Maybe one or two who were not member of the group but at the table should, and it wasn't rather in London than at the other side, they made comment that one could have read as at least individual views of FASB board members that someone may take and see as a piece of guidance. So I would hope for a bit more hesitation there, because I know how things go. A board member said at this official meeting. But all in all, I liked the way the topics were discussed. I don't think we had the hottest topics on the agenda for the first meeting. It's wise to not have the hottest topics on the agenda for the first meeting. So we will see over the next meetings how it goes. But now everyone is waiting for a response from the boards on, do they want to do something about the topic that were discussed or don't they? And that is what is outstanding. And before we have that, the process for this first round of discussion hasn't reached its end, and you cannot judge the success of it. But I can add, because I got a bit of a different perspective from my day hat I've got on, of customer that approach an SAP in a way of asking for functionalities to support, and that is growing. So more and more companies start to work on the topic. there is a significant difference depending on what industry you look into, and you can imagine what industry is most active. But we see that there are more and more questions come. And interestingly, not only questions on things that are new, but questions on a lot of things that are, in the end, unchanged, where people for the first time start to look into that didn't do in the past, and even topics that have nothing to do with revenue that people observe by working on the revenue, suddenly looking into things like currency. And that's something we observe on that end.
Thanks, Christoph. Ian, did you want to make a comment there?
We're about to have the second meeting, and in that second meeting we'll review what was said in the first meeting and kind of reach agreement, we hope. I think that's the main point, Henry. Yeah.
Peter Chambers, sorry.
Yeah, I just want to make an observation. From discussions I've had in the UK recently, revenue recognition has jumped right up to the top of the agenda. And I think there are two main reasons for that, one of which is that a big grouping of audit chairs, now they have a greater level of responsibility in the UK, are really quite worried about revenue recognition, particularly in larger companies, because it's quite difficult to really see through some of the more aggregate management accounts. And it's a huge topic of concern for them. And secondly, observations that some of the corporate issues out there at the moment are to do with revenue recognition, whether it's a bit of a shock with Tesco recently or whether it's the heart of the problem with HP and autonomy and stuff. Everything I attend has revenue recognition somewhere right at the top of the agenda. So I think it's crucial to get it right.
Interesting observations there, but I think very, very valid. Okay, what I'm going to suggest then, if there are no more, and obviously we can come back at the end of the session to any other comments, is Hugh, pass over to you for the technical discussion.
Good morning. We're on paper 1A, if you want to follow it. I'll walk you through that paper in highlight. Before I do that, just to say a few words about the ASAF meeting, which Ian already mentioned. The ASAF met in last month and discussed, I guess, all the big projects that we had, so insurance, leases, conceptual framework, and also the disclosure initiative. In addition to those topics, the forum also discussed the post-implementation review on business combinations, as well as the discount rates research project. The meeting goes for 2 days, so I can't really give you a summary of all the detailed technical discussions, but just to give you a little bit of a feel, I guess, in terms of a couple of examples. I guess we had quite a spirited debate in that post-implementation, when talking about the post-implementation review on business combinations on the treatment of goodwill. Some very interesting discussion about the extent of the validity of the current impairment approach versus the amortization approach. We also received a paper which considered an approach which embodied both impairment and amortization. So I think it's an interesting topic, and as I say, quite a lot of interesting debate on that. And you won't be surprised, there was some spirited debate as well on leases and insurance. I guess on leases, we received an EFRAG staff paper which challenged the definition of a lease, and I think, as you already heard from Ian, we're bringing an additional paper on lease definition back to the board next week. So that is in hand. I think Ian has as well already mentioned there is, starting next year, the two-year review of ASAF, and I'm sure at the appropriate point you'll have the opportunity to get involved in that or comment on it. So just turning to this technical activities update paper, on page 2, you have a summary of all the documents that we have issued since we last met. As Ian already mentioned, by far and away the most significant document is IFRS 9 on financial instruments. We've also issued updates to IAS 41 on bearer plants, IAS 27, separate financial statements, the equity method in separate financial statements, as well as some narrow scope amendments to IFRS 10 on consolidated financial statements and IAS 28 investments in associates and joint ventures. In terms of other documents, I think the highlight is arguably, and Ian has already mentioned it, the discussion paper on the financial effects of rate regulation. I'll say a few more words about that in a moment. And then a number of other documents which you can see summarised at the bottom of page 2. I'm not going to say too much more about the transition resource groups. We've already touched on the fact that the revenue recognition group obviously is already up and going, and the impairment group is getting started. Perhaps also to mention, though, we're frequently asked whether the fact that we've set up these transition resource groups means that we will always have a transition resource group every time we release a major standard. And as this council has advised us, the answer is clearly not the case. And obviously, it's clear from the impairment, the name of that impairment resource group, that is not covering the entirety of IFRS 9. It is just the impairment element of it. We were asked at the trustees' meeting what the position on transition resource groups would be for other big topics like insurance, and the simple answer is we will cross that bridge when we get there, and no doubt we will take your advice in doing so. The other point to mention in terms of advisory groups in this section, there is an advisory group on Sharia-compliant instruments and transactions, and that group met in Kuala Lumpur last month. Debated three very specific issues on classification and measurement of financial instruments under IFRS 9, and those issues continue to be debated and as part of that group. So let me now turn to insurance. As you know, one of our big projects. In the first half of this year, just to recap, the board largely concluded its tentative decisions relating to non-participating contracts, and in particular addressed three of the five areas that were targeted in the 2013 exposure draft, so those being unlocking the contractual service margin, recognising the effects of changes in discount rates in OCI, and insurance contracts revenue. And as Ian mentioned, the debate at the moment is very much focused on participating contracts. We do continue to have very extensive debate with key stakeholders. We've met a European CFO forum. We've also met representatives from Canada and from the Asia-Pacific region. And our debates with these various parties do continue. I think as a result of that, it is now the case that deliberations on insurance will continue into next year, but it is still our target to publish the final standard in 2015. I would also say that, as you appreciate, all the board's decisions are tentative in nature, but in this project more than any other, and I think we've already touched on this to an extent, putting all the pieces together is complex, and only when we get to the very end of the project can we see what the whole jigsaw puzzle looks like, if I can put it that way. And for that reason, we're now talking more in terms of the board giving indicative leanings, which is even more tentative than tentative decisions. There is a lot of complexity to it, and we are listening as hard as we can to as many stakeholders as we can. And for that reason, it is complex putting it all together, to put it all together at the end. But as I say, the firm intention is to release the final standard next year. We've already touched on leases. Ian has already made a few comments on leases. As Ian has stressed, we are converged in terms of the big picture point, which is that leases result in assets and liabilities and will result in recognition on the balance sheet. As you know, it's a joint project with the FASB, and we are converged on a number of points of detail. Not in terms of how the income statement is presented, but in many other points of detail, and they are listed out for you at the top of page 5. We're still working very hard to achieve convergence on this project, and we do hear that many stakeholders, probably all stakeholders, want convergence in this area. So we continue to work very hard on this important topic. As has already been mentioned, we're revisiting the lease definition topic next week, and we'll obviously look to stay as converged on that as we have previously. Moving on then to IFRS for SMEs, we're in the process of conducting a comprehensive review of the standard for SMEs. There was an exposure draft published in 2013, and the SME implementation group has been considering the commentary on all of that and pulling together a report to summarise all the feedback on those comment letters, and that will be coming before the board this month as well. Moving then on to the conceptual framework, as Ian has already mentioned, that project is moving or continues to move at an intense pace. I think we're now approaching something like 60 papers that have been brought before the board this year, so it is a really huge effort. I think just to pull out some of the highlights, the original intention was not to fundamentally reconsider the objective and qualitative characteristics chapters of the conceptual framework as published in 2010, but we've had to revisit that, and especially listening to views from investors. Some of the tentative decisions which have been made include the following: that to reintroduce a reference to prudence. In the way that the board is currently thinking about that, that means caution under conditions of uncertainty. Prudence means different things to different people, but as it's currently envisaged, as I say, it's caution under conditions of uncertainty. We also, as one of these tentative decisions, have decided to increase, or the board has decided to increase, the prominence of references to stewardship. But the board has tentatively decided not to reinstate the term reliability to describe one of the two fundamental qualitative characteristics of useful financial information. In terms of recent discussions or last month's discussions, I think Ian already mentioned quite a significant discussion on the topic of measurement. And I think at this point, just to summarise where the board has got to on this, the board has decided to think about measurement under in the context or under the heading, under two headings really, which is historic cost and current value. So that discussion will be, I think it's fair to say, more rooted in the underlying standard than a very highly theoretical conceptual discussion of measurement. There will be some conceptual discussion, so the whole notion of entry and exit values under those two topics, but it is, I think it's fair to say, a more practical approach to measurement than something which is highly theoretical. So it will be possible to look at the section on measurement in the conceptual framework and see how it links in to the underlying standards as they currently are. We've already touched on the topic of long-term investment, which was also discussed at length in the last board meeting. As I mentioned, there is a very good paper on that subject, and the details of those discussions and some of the flavour of why the board has decided what it has will be in the basis for conclusions when the exposure draft is published. And at the moment, the plan is to publish the exposure draft in the early part of next year. So it's been a very intense project, which is largely kept to schedule. We've already talked about our favourite titled document, Macro Hedging is its short title, but Accounting for Dynamic Risk Management, a Portfolio Revaluation Approach to Macro Hedging. Not too much to say about that, in addition to what Ian has already said. Comment letters are due by the end of this week, so if you are anxious to comment, then you've got a few days left. We are very interested to get comments on this paper, I suppose because, as Ian said, it's largely, or it is, depicted in the context of interest rate risk management in banks, but we very explicitly say that we think it has broader application, and we're very interested to get views on what that broader application might be in other sectors or in terms of other risks. So we look forward to receiving all those comments. Moving on then to rate-regulated activities, as Ian already mentioned, we have developed or published a discussion paper on this topic. This discussion paper is perhaps in some ways one of our new type discussion papers, and as you'll see later, and that we'll have read later in the paper, we're now looking at research in a different light, and therefore looking at discussion papers in a different light, and you will see different types of discussion paper coming out. This paper does not include any specific accounting proposals, so it's not the type of discussion paper that will lead automatically to an exposure draft and automatically to a new standard. It very much is exploring what information about rate-regulated activities is useful to users of financial statements and outlines some possible approaches only, but is not in any way prescriptive at all. It's really looking for views. So we're very much interested in comments on that. The comment period ends in the middle of January next year. So, as I say, we're interested in comments on that. Turning to the disclosure initiative, I'll just say a very few words about this because this is a topic which you'll be is coming up later in your discussions. But just briefly to say, it is a portfolio of projects, so there is a number of different threads to this this project. And very broadly, it splits between implementation projects and research projects. The implementation projects include narrow-focused amendments to IAS-1 on presentation of financial statements, which we're hoping to finalise by the end of the year. In addition, some narrow-focused amendments to IAS-7 on statement of cash flows. The research projects, and this is where the bulk of your discussions will be, are going to be focusing on the principles of disclosure, materiality, and review of disclosures in existing standards, which is a topic, or which are all topics, which I think resonate with very strongly with preparers, and therefore look forward to those discussions a great deal. I would just mention before moving off this topic, or it's perhaps a related topic, the whole area of performance reporting is a subject that a lot of people are interested in, and we hear a lot of comments to do something on. At this point, the board has added a project on performance reporting to its research program, and we're currently developing a paper setting out the scope of that project, so we'll see where that one goes in future. It is not part of the disclosure initiative, though. I think the feeling was that would just get too much in the way of getting through some of our important milestones in the disclosure project. So that's an interesting topic on the research agenda. In terms of the IFRS taxonomy, just an update on there, I guess from a strategic point of view, the point, or one of the main points here, is that the trustees have asked the board to get integrally involved in approving IFRS taxonomy updates. And at the moment, we're going through two trials to get the board in a good position to make those approvals. So one is a trial focused on new and amended standards, and the second trial is focused on so-called common practice aspects of the taxonomy. So that work is going to continue, or those trials are going to continue into the first quarter of next year, at which point the board will be fully integrated in the approval process going forward. So then to talk about our research project agenda, this is becoming a much larger part of what we do. Alan has led a number of sessions with the board in the last few months outlining what all those projects are for the board and seeking the board's advice on how to prioritise those projects. They are at this stage, we have at this point 15 projects, which sounds like quite a lot. Well, it is quite a lot, actually, and there's some quite meaty topics in there. I think it's fair to say, however, that not all of those topics will lead to standards. Many of them will just perhaps stop, or some of them will just perhaps stop at the stage of a discussion paper, having concluded that perhaps the problem that we thought we had we don't have, or perhaps the problem is different from what we thought. I think as well, just to make a high-level comment about the research agenda, the agenda consultation, our next agenda consultation we will be developing throughout next year, there is inevitably going to be a very high degree of overlap between the research agenda as it's currently set out and the agenda consultation and what comes back through the agenda consultation, and therefore we can expect some movement in terms of what remains on the agenda post that consultation. I'm not going to go through all the projects on the research agenda, but perhaps just to name the ones that are in the higher priority list. So we have business combinations under common control, which is of particular interest to many stakeholders, but including IOSCO and the Emerging Economies Group. The disclosure initiative, which I already touched on, is part of the programme. Discount rates, which I mentioned, was something discussed in ASAF, is part of the programme. We also have financial instruments with characteristics of equity, which has to some extent been debated as part of the conceptual framework, but which is, I think at this point, going to be a quite a detailed and complex research project as we go into a standard level of detail over and beyond what the conceptual framework can naturally do. And then other issues on the agenda include foreign currency translation and inflation, which have been raised by certain national standard setters. So they're topics which are very important to certain stakeholders. Finally, the discussion paper on macro hedging that we already touched on. There are, as I say, in addition to that, some medium-term priority projects and some longer-term priority projects. And as I say, it is possible that either the prioritisation or the existence of these projects on the agenda will be revisited as part of the agenda consultation. Just to broaden out a little bit, as I said a few minutes back, the whole research programme is very much part of the new way we think about things. I think the idea very much is if we can do the research up front and figure out what the problem is and tie down what the problem is, then the route to an effective standard will be that much quicker. I think somebody famous once said, if you don't know where you're going, any path will take you there, and that's a sure recipe for a very mixed route. That's what we're trying to avoid with this research agenda. And as part of that research capability, Alan has been building out our research function. So you see on pages 13 and 14 some of the things that we've been doing. So we've hired additional resource, we've established an internal research portal, as well as a new research centre. We have a research roundup publication which has been published. And I think there's already been mentioned by Ian, there was a recent forum at Oxford University, really just getting stronger dialogue with the academic community. And that forum will be repeated in coming years. I've already touched on the post-implementation review of business combinations. It was discussed recently by the board. Suffice to say that the board is satisfied that sufficient work has now been done in order to go ahead and produce a feedback statement. So that will now proceed. And then moving on to the education initiative on pages 14 and 15 now. We have a very small education team, actually. It's only staff of four. But you can see how busy they are getting around the world. They literally have been all over the world doing conferences of various types, which are summarised. The team has also developed the 2014 edition of the so-called Green Book and worked on a number of other publications. I would particularly mention the Investor Newsletter, which has been very successful. We've now produced two Investor Newsletters, which seem to be going down well. And the team has also collaborated with the CFA Institute in working on some investor-focused multimedia presentations. Quite a lot of work going on in this activity and quite a lot of work planned. We also have had support from members of the Advisory Council, for which many thanks. And I think it's a topic which was of some interest last week at the trustees and strategically will be interesting to see where the education initiative goes in coming years. That's basically all I wanted to say. At the back of this paper, you have a summary of our implementation projects. You also have the most recent version of our work plan. And with that, I will stop. And if there are any further questions, we can take them.
Questions, comments, observations? Anne?
If I could just make a comment that has come from the insurance community in a way. The insurance standard has been in development now for some considerable time, and I'm asking you what kind of feedback you're getting from the insurance community, because the feedback I received was a degree of frustration with the level and length of deliberation, and is there going to in the end become a conclusion to this? If so, is it going to be a satisfactory conclusion? Does it need to, and if it's not necessarily going to be satisfactory, is there a plan B, a fallback position? I was getting a tenor that there was a degree of frustration in the insurance community, and I just really like your comment on that observation.
I'll respond to that if you like. There's frustration in lots of insurance communities, and they all have different frustrations, unfortunately, and that's our frustration. Our frustration's trying to put together their frustrations and come up with an answer. And it is not easy. Insurance is carried out in different ways in different parts of the world, and there isn't one even major business model that you can put your finger on. So you're trying to please all the people all the time. And as I say, perhaps as a result, we've made the whole thing complex. So we're working on with the intention of finishing in the near future. And as Olive said earlier, you know, we've got to get the right answer, but his version of the right answer will be different from, say, an Australian version of the right answer. And so we've got compromises. There is no plan B. Plan A is to finish the standard. And that's it.
Joanna Mayer, that was precisely the point that I was getting from members of the insurance community, that there may not be agreement, may not be a solution, and therefore, that was the question, was there plan B? So I think that was the point that I just wanted to raise. Thanks.
Yes, that's right, and there has to be a solution.
Christoph?
Yeah, maybe only a little word of praise. I think the new structuring, or call it classification of projects into research and other with the different priorities, I think that helps the transparency of what the board's doing a lot. I've got to admit, this was the most transparent update I've read so far here in the 6 years on the council. And I think that is important, that people understand where the different projects stand and which of the projects may result into a standard soon, which others may never. So I think that's a difficult job well done to get this new classification in place.
Surya?
Thank you, Joanna. I want to touch on the point that Christoph raised, and clearly while the standards themselves are a few that we are looking at, the entire process, including the discussion papers, the research, and everything else we do, there is a heavy agenda for the board and those of us who are part of the standard-setting process. Now, in line with that, I must say that I was amused to read the new terminology of indicative leanings, because it tends to almost expand the process. And when I go on a bond deal roadshow, the investment bankers talk to me about whispers, guidance, and God knows what else, and eventually we reach the final price. And here there almost seems to be a waltz in the playing. We started initially with expanding what I call the front end with discussion papers, requests for comment. Now we are extending the back end. And as long as it helps for a collaborative conclusion, I'm all for it. But we should make sure that we contain this process and not let it get out of hand.
Perhaps just to make one comment, the phrase indicative leanings we only use in the context of insurance because of the joint complexity of all the decisions that are made as we go along. It wasn't intended to have a broader application.
Having said that, I think I perhaps put my views that I think Surya has got a very valid point in that we've got to be, or the board needs to be very careful that it's not, if you like, making things too complex and it's too long-winded and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. My, Joanna's personal views, which I said I wouldn't do at this meeting. However, Begonia.
Thank you, Joanna. Well, this is a comment about related with the recent Oxford workshop where we were discussing about conceptual framework and in particular to the decisions that the board has already appearedly made about reinstating prudence and stewardship. Well, I wonder at what extent the academic community in the literature has more or less provided evidence that it's quite difficult to achieve simultaneously stewardship and valuation. Therefore, to the extent that those that exercise stewardship will get the possibility to get information, private information, directly from the companies, I don't know if it is really possible to say in the framework that the two objectives will be achieved directly. So in my view, it would be much more, it would be better to focus on those that don't have the possibility to get information, which are the general investors. And regarding the prudence, well, within the academic literature, it's more frequent to talk about conservatism, unconditional or conditional conservatism. And then perhaps it would be good to have some reference to the inclusion of bad news as soon as possible, because this is the problem of moral hazard. So instead of just talking about prudence as a caution under conditions of uncertainty, it would be perhaps convenient to think about the other meaning of prudence in the way of introducing the bad news when they appear, instead of delaying them as it normally happens due to these information asymmetry problems. That's all.
Thanks, Begonia. Hugh, do you want to make any comment around the discussions with research community or the academic community on those things?
Alan, do you want to say anything?
No, we had a very interesting discussion a couple of weeks ago in Oxford with just a bit of background. The research forum was focused exclusively on the conceptual framework, and we had six papers, academic papers, that focused on that, and one was on conservatism. The little bit of feedback, just to reiterate, I think my recollection of the conceptual framework is that we do state in there that primarily, if you look at it's an investor focus, and the stewardship is would more likely to lead to supplementary disclosures in the notes. And I think that's the way the board sees that you could meet both objectives, is by focusing primarily for the recognition and measurement and then supplementing to meet another objective.
Thanks, Alan. Linda,
sorry. All I was ahead of me, so I was expecting to go after that. But I just wanted to come back to Anne's comment on the insurance industry and then Ian's on the differences around the world. One thing that I have noticed over the last, say, 6 or 8 months is that there is a common understanding that the business models are not that different around the world. We have different products around the world and different focuses as a result of that. But the discussions that are happening over the last few months have actually just focused on the commonalities and then a better understanding of why there are differences. That doesn't mean that we are close to the standard yet, but I would say that we're getting closer, but there's still a long way to go. I would also note that the three board advisors from the insurance are with attendance today, so I think a few of us plan on grabbing them for lunch, dinner, or whatever break meetings that we can get with them. So thank you.
Well done, Linda. Sorry, and my eyesight, I obviously picked up Linda before Olaf. Olaf, you go.
No, that's no problem. I think on this point, I wouldn't say, at least the European insurance industry is indeed, I wouldn't say as frustrated over the timing. I think we do want the IFRS 4 finalized, but I think that we would On the other hand, actually, we welcome the fact that we understand the ISB is taking more time to finalise because we think that was needed. So although as quick as possible, but as I said, with a reasonable outcome out of that, I think in terms of complication, I think while we also, of course, want everything to be as simple as possible, but if that simplicity results in it not working as intended, then again, unfortunately, that we have to accept complexity. And unfortunately, some of that complexity is due to some of the constraints put on us through IFRS 9. So because of the way IFRS 9 is designed, and we understand some of the reasons for that, that in order for IFRS 9 and IFRS 4 to work together as it needs to in an insurance business, we therefore have to introduce certain elements into IFRS 4 which basically do complicate things. So I thought I just want to add those things. And obviously we are looking forward to, as you said, engaging, ongoing engagement on this issue. And we do think the industry has come together more than ever before on this issue. There's a lot of areas where they're in very strong agreement. And really where there are disagreements, I would say it's more the detail, although it's important detail.
Thank you for that, Olaf. And just listening to the comments on insurance, Ian, I think that, if you like the way that you've summarised it, and I've heard you summarise it before, that it's very complicated. The way the standard is looking at the moment, we need to go back and revisit it, but that there is support from the... Or not revisit it, sorry, to make sure that it makes sense at the end, that there is support for getting the standard right or working through it to get it right, and that the insurance industry is behind you to get there. It's, I think, what I'm hearing from the people in this room.
Daryl, do you want to make any comments?
I don't think there's too much I could add to what's been said. I think the important thing from our, and perhaps to explain these tentative leanings, because I think that's come up a few times. I think the big concern we have here is because there are so many moving parts in an insurance standard, we want to be very comfortable before we make a final decision that these parts all fit together, that they all work. But that has had the added advantage, I guess, at this stage, and I think it comes from Linda's point as well, that because we are using tentative leanings as we go through the process, we can get feedback on those leanings and try to accommodate those in whatever final model decision we come to. But I think I take Anne's point that we do have to be very aware of where the insurance industry is, and we have remained or continue to communicate with them through the process. But it's, the point about it is to make sure the moving parts, the individual decisions we take, actually all do fit together as a single model.
Okay, Thomas, and there are a few more questions. We're scheduled to break at 10:30, but we'll continue on, and obviously very important session, so to finish this. So, Thomas.
Well, thank you. Two questions or remarks. First one, considering the
let's Can you bring your speaker slightly closer to you? I can't hear you. I don't know about others.
Okay, let's do it like this. Is that better? Okay. Two remarks or questions to the ISB. The first one is dealing with the question, what is the conflict between the agenda consultation coming up next year and the long list of research projects? You mentioned that there may be a conflict because when we enter into the agenda consultation, you may end up with additional projects. And the big question is, what will be then on the final list of projects coming up? So there may be a presumption that you may have already decided on the agenda consultation by doing the research project. So that is maybe a feeling in the general public. The second thing is about long-term investment. And my question is, what I hear sometimes is that the discussion about long-term investment and the relevance of accounting policies is basically fundamental also the question of do we need fair value or are we against fair value accounting. Is that the feeling at the board as well, or is it more about a general topic, long-term investment? The first thing I hear when we talk about long-term investment and accounting is most of the times we are against more fair value accounting, but I may be wrong on that one.
So in terms of the agenda consultation and the research agenda, I didn't mean to imply there's necessarily a conflict. I think there's certainly a degree of overlap. I think I would say probably two things. I think, first of all, the current research agenda very much feeds off the last agenda consultation. So to a large extent, we're obliged to have on the agenda what we currently have. But as we develop the consultation next year and put out the request for information, we will listen to what comes back, and that will shape what stays on the agenda, and obviously we have to listen to that feedback and be responsive to it. So we will just have to see. I think in terms of long-term investment and fair value, I guess the first step is that the board, and we touched on this in the conceptual framework discussion, I mean, the board is at this point very much embracing a mixed measurement approach. I think that's here to stay. I think if you read Peter Clark's paper on it, it has some discussion of fair value as it relates to long-term investment. We don't think that use of fair value accounting has hindered long-term investment, and Peter talks about that in some detail. And I think in terms of whether the board is particularly predisposed or otherwise to fair value measurement, I don't think so. I think it's, the board will look at each standards level decision as it comes to them case by case.
Thanks, Hugh. This Peter Clark paper is obviously very important bedtime reading. Garth.
Thanks, Madam Chair. I was just wondering regarding the transition resource group. While it doesn't intend to issue guidance, I was wondering how a submitter would know what views had been discussed. And so from looking at the website, it does seem that the only way that you would be aware of that is to listen to the webcast. Now, it seemed that for the first question and the first meeting, there was more than an hour allocated to that. Now, for a submitter, they might be prepared to listen for an hour, but for others who wanting to have some understanding, I was just wondering how efficient listening to the archive material is, and whether there was any other possibility of any other way of having some understanding of what was discussed.
Yeah, Henry will correct me if I'm wrong, but at the next meeting we'll have a report on what was discussed at the last meeting and a summary of what was decided in effect. And does that become a separate document on its own after that?
That's right, and that document itself will be on the website. But we've steered away from trying to produce a very comprehensive note of the meeting on the basis that it's difficult to sort of capture a sort of full comprehensive set of minutes, and because effectively the actual the paper for discussion and the meeting was all broadcast. But we hope that what we're producing basically gives a flavour of what was discussed, and crucially what's going to happen in terms of next steps on the topic that was discussed.
Thanks, Henry. And last, I think, before we break, Jens.
Thank you. I just want to raise one question with respect to the work plan, to the current work plan. We recognize that until May 2014, there was the notion of the project written puts over NCI and subsequent measurement. And when we look to the current work plan, the project has been removed. And we now wonder and we hear feedback from the profession, what is the current status of the project? So the project was raised as a diversity in practice project in 2010, and now we have the draft interpretation of the IFRS Interpretation Committee outstanding. And I think, when I remember correctly, in March 2013, the board noticed or mentioned that they are going to amend as a quick fix para 23 of IAS 32, and now we cannot identify the project anymore on the work plan.
It's been absorbed as part of the liabilities equity project at this point, and it'll be, let's say, picked up as part of that.
So, but there will be no quick fix then, so we will stuck with the diversity in practice.
Correct.
I think I can say with my past interpretation committee's hat on that that's been backwards and forwards and very definitely got into this larger project. Well, on that, sorry, I have a wry smile on my face with that one. On that, what I'd like to do, unless there are any further comments or anything further from you, Hugh or Ian, is to conclude that session. I thank both well, Ian, I'm not sure if you wrote the paper, you Hans for writing that paper, or whoever wrote it for you, and Hugh, because I think that both of those papers, in terms of what was in our information, are extraordinarily useful, as Christoph said, and transparent and high-level papers, extraordinarily useful for the Advisory Council. So thank you for that. And I think the discussion has been very valuable. And to me, two key things have come out of that in terms of where the board is heading. You know, the obvious interest in insurance is one of them. I find it fascinating that there was no discussion on leases whatsoever, which is interesting in itself that there was none. So insurance and long-term investing obviously seem to be the two areas that these council members and the conceptual framework are focusing on. So I think that's interesting feedback to the board and staff. So thank you very much. If we take a break now, and if we can be back in here by 5 to 11, 5 to whatever it is, to start again. All right, 5 to 11, yeah. Thank you very much.